received the reply. So the devotees advertised, I can't remember if they charged any money for admission. Was it some hall or something like that? I'm not sure if it was. Carnegie Hall is a big hall. I don't think it was there. But it was at some hall in New York. And very, very few people came. And the devotees were feeling somewhat bad that they advertised Prabhupada was coming, and he was Swamiji then, and so few people came. So at the end, after they were apologizing to Prabhupada and saying, "Oh, Prabhupada, so sorry no one came." And Prabhupada said, "Oh, no one came? You did not see Narada Muni? You did not see?" He named some of the demigods. So continue. So we heard in the last two chapters, it was describing the creation. And the creation, or in one sense, there are different aspects of the creation. One aspect is the work that is done by the Lord and then his empowered agent, Lord Brahma. Actually, when Lord Brahma is doing his part of the creation, one way to look at it is that Lord Brahma is doing it, and the other way to look at it is that it is Krishna who is doing it, but he's doing it through Lord Brahma. So both ways are actually correct. So Lord Brahma is doing it, but actually it is Krishna's system for manifesting the creation. Why? So that the living entities can populate the universe and thereby have a place on one hand to express their desires, because in this material world the living entities enter. Why? Not to serve Krishna generally, but to enjoy. So they cannot be in that spirit mood of enjoyment and be in the spiritual world. So Krishna so kindly develops a whole material realm to give us an opportunity to express our desires, to enjoy ourselves, to be the center of existence. And then when we get tired of that farce, the material purpose of the material world changes. It changes to a place where we can kriti sadhya, Bhavet sadhanadabhi nitya sadasya bhavasya prakatta middhi sadhyata. That it becomes a place where we can go, we can practice sadhana, the practices of Krishna consciousness, to achieve love for Krishna, the sadhya, love for Krishna, the goal. And then when we've achieved love for Krishna, then Puna janma naiti mameti. No more births in this material world. There's no need to be born again in the material world because we don't have the material world spirit. We don't have that mood. And gradually, the coverings over the soul, both the subtle and gross, they dissolve. And then one can go to the spiritual world and rejoin Krishna there. So the creation has been described. So the physical elements, how one by one from Mahavishnu being there and then injecting the time element into the pradhan, to the mahatattva, and then the universal form coming in Gaurdaksha Vishnu, Karandaksha Vishnu, etc. And then ignorance is created, and there's a list of six primary saga, Prakrita, creations by Krishna. And then following that are the Visarga, secondary creations by Lord Brahma. So ignorance is the sixth creation of the Lord, and it's also the first creation of Lord Brahma. He manifests, because Lord Brahma, as we heard in the beginning of the first of this third canto, what he does as the secondary creation, he manifests that which has already been created. in a primary sense by Krishna. Krishna creates it in some form and Brahma manifests it. So Brahma, the first thing that we're going to hear about that he creates, because we're going to begin today to hear about his Brahma secondary creation, because his function is to populate the universe, make sure that the universe gets full of the living entities, because the universe without the living entities in their respective positions is like a prison house. What is the use of it unless the prisoners are put there into the different grades of prisons that they desire and earned? So, in the last chapter, so we spoke a few moments about that first chapter, the two chapters ago, which was chapter 10, where the different forms, the different aspects of the creation were described, the different levels of creation, and also it was hinted at, or mentioned very briefly, how the Lord had created time factor. And then, to give us a perspective of, because the material world seems so vast, and maybe we hear how meteors fall every 33 years. It seems like a long time, you know, a shower of meteors come, and now it's specifically a problem because of the satellites that are orbiting the Earth or something like that. The 33 years compared to the time scale that is mentioned in that chapter 11 is like nothing. The actual expanse of a lengthy time is given, and that is Lord Brahma's life, which is billions and billions of years, and that's compared to like a namesha, a second, or less than a second of the Lord's time, the eternal time. So after that is described to give us a perspective of how this material world is vast, or the universe is vast. But then there are coverings on the universe. Each covering is 10 times more vast. And then these universes are like foam in the water. Now they're linking with each other practically like atoms. So in time, we are insignificant. In space, we are insignificant. And yet, we are thinking ourselves so great and so important. This is the effect of ignorance, of illusion, of Maya. So after this description of the extent of the creation, including time, is given, then Lord Brahma in chapter 12 is going to actually begin manifesting the creation. And today, let's see how far we get. We should, if Krishna allows, at least cover the first three elements of creation, three things that Krishna creates, or Brahma creates rather. And the first thing he creates is ignorance. And then, being dissatisfied with that creation, although it's necessary, because the living entities, in order to enjoy our foolish existence, we must be in ignorance of our true identity. And then, Brahma feels somewhat disgusted, sorry that he creates ignorance, and therefore he creates knowledge in the form of the four Kumaras. And then he asks them to do something, to procreate, to help fill his mission, to fill the universe with living entities. They refuse. Because they have knowledge, they don't want to get entangled. So Brahma becomes angry, and the personification of his anger, Lord Shiva, Rudra, the Rudra principle of anger, develops. And then we'll hear about that. So we'll see right from the very beginning, as soon as you try to do something in the material world, even if you're Lord Brahma, it doesn't exactly work out the way you plan. You try to go this way, and there's an adverse effect on that, and then you compensate for that, and then there's a reaction to that. Going this way and that way and back and forth, from ignorance to knowledge to anger. And then you say, well, I'm not going to do that anymore, and then manifest something else, and that has a good effect, and then it has a bad effect, fortunate, unfortunate, good, bad. This is the nature of the material world, and it's so dissatisfying to the soul who is wishing to enjoy, because he's putting all his energy into this world, and he wants it to really work out the way he wants. And it can't. Maybe he gets something he wants, and they get something he doesn't want. Sometimes he gets a lot more he doesn't want than what he wants. And to get what he wants, he has to undergo so much difficulty. So therefore, there's so much. And this is even for Lord Brahma, what to speak of us tiny, less powerful, insignificant, insignificant in space, insignificant in time, us living entities. So what should we do in this time? What we hear, we should try, we have to act. So we have to learn, as Brahma is doing, to act for Krishna's pleasure. And then really one must be detached from the results. Because as long as Krishna is pleased, then actually the living entity will be pleased. There's one, I guess we'll get to it. I don't want to spend all the time just speaking now. That's such a nice purport about that we're acting for the pleasure of the self, for ourselves, selfishness. But actually how to please the self, nobody knows, because no one knows who the self is. And soon as we act to please the self, but with knowledge and realization of who the self is, then everything changes. Then the self actually can be pleased. Because just imagine trying to please the self without knowing who the self is. Just imagine like trying to feed the body if you think the body is the shirt and coat or something like that. How will we feel satisfied? So we're meant to do things for our self-interest, but we need knowledge of who the self is first. Okay, Brahma proceeds. So Maitreya Muni began Maitreya Vacha. Iti te varnita chata. Chata means Vidura. O learned Vidura, Maitreya said, so far I have explained to you the glories of the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his feature of Kala. What does Kala mean? Time. So how powerful and glorious is the Lord's feature is time. So he's completed explaining that. Now you can hear from me the creation of Brahma, the reservoir of all Vedic knowledge. And indeed, in the end of this chapter, that's what's going to be described, how Brahma creates the Vedic knowledge and puts in place the Vedic system. He is the reservoir of Vedic knowledge because it is coming from him. So before something can come from him, he has to have it. He's the repository of Vedic knowledge, reservoir of that, and therefore it is placed there by Krishna, and then he manifests it. So what did Brahma first create? Brahma first created the nascent engagements, like self-deception. These are very interesting, actually. Sasag jagre andatamizram. Ata tamizramadikrit mahamohan chamoham cha tamas chagyana vrittaya. So these are all elements of ignorance that he creates first. Delusion, so that the living entities become bewildered. So first Brahma created the nescient. There is science and nescience. The opposite of science is ignorance. The nascent engagement, like self-deception, the sense of death, anger after frustration, the sense of false ownership and illusory bodily conception or forgetfulness of one's real identity. These are Brahma's first creations, because before the living entities can enter, all this illusion has to be there so that they fall right into the illusion so they can go ahead with their false desires. To be the center of existence. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Before the factual creation of the living entities and different varieties of species, the conditions under which a living being in the material world has to live were created by Brahma. Unless the living entity forgets his real identity, it is impossible for him to live in material conditions of life. We have to first be in forgetfulness. That means in ignorance. Therefore, the first condition of material existence is forgetfulness of one's real identity. Atmamayam rite rajan parasyanu bhavatmana nagate tarta sambandha svapna jastam ivanjasa. That means that by the influence of the Atmamaya, or the illusory potency of the living entity, practically speaking of the Lord, the living entity practically falls asleep and svapna jastam. He sees himself like he dreams he is something other than what he is. So he forgets what he is and dreams he is something other than what he is. And by forgetting one's real identity, one is sure to be afraid of death. That's under Tamisra. And by forgetting one's real identity, one is sure to be afraid of death, although a pure living entity is deathless and birthless. This false identification with material nature is the cause of false ownership of things which are offered by the arrangement of superior control. So that we forget who we are, that what are we? We are Krishna's, and Krishna is ours. And instead of thinking that Krishna is ours, is the Lord of our life, our true possession, we think these things composed of matter are ours. And we try to embrace them. And they cause death to us, actually. False ownership. Thinking things that are not ours, especially and primarily the material body. All material resources are offered to the living entity for his peaceful living and for the discharge of the duties of self-realization and conditioned life. But to false identification, the conditioned soul becomes entrapped by the sense of false ownership of the property of the Supreme Lord. That is what traps us. We try to exploit those things produced of the material energy, thinking that they are ours. Second verse, continuing on that. Seeing such a misleading creation as a sinful task, Brahma did not feel much pleasure in his activity, and therefore he purified himself by meditation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then he began another term of creation. So he did his duty, wasn't very happy with it, but he did his duty, created ignorance, and then went on. Prabhupada's purport. Although he created the different influences of nescience, Lord Brahma was not satisfied in performing such a thankless task. But he had to do it because most of the conditioned souls wanted it to be so. Some of the conditioned souls don't want this ignorance, yet they are conditioned and within it. They want to get out. Like a good prisoner is not rebellious. He's learned his lesson. It's just a matter of time before he gets out. And then when he's in the prison, because he's learned the lesson, what does he do? He acts very nicely and he tries to help reform the other prisoners. So most of the conditioned souls want it to be out. They want to stay in the material world. Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that he is present in everyone's heart and is helping everyone to either remember or forget. The question may be raised why the Lord, who is all merciful, helps one to remember and another to forget. Actually, his mercy is not exhibited in partiality towards one and enmity towards another. The living entity, as part and parcel of the Lord, is partially independent because he partially possesses all the qualities of the Lord. Anyone who has some independence may sometimes misuse it due to ignorance. When the living entity prefers to misuse his independence and glide down towards nescience, the all-merciful Lord, first of all, tries to protect him from the trap. But when the living entity persists in gliding down to hell, hell means being in the material world. Because even in the best of positions, one has to suffer so much. Death, diseases, old age, birth, misery, this, that. Adiyatmakari, bhautikari, daivik. So the Lord helps him due to his persistence, due to his misuse of his free will. He helps him to forget his real position. The Lord helps the falling living entity glide down to the lowest point, just to give him the chance to see if he is happy by misusing his independence. He's with us all the time, and we have a desire. Oh, let me do that. So he says, okay, and he gives the facility. Now are you happy? No, I'm not happy yet. I want to do that now. That'll make me happy. Okay, he gives. Okay, now are you happy? No, I need something else. I want to go here and get this and achieve that. Okay, facility is granted. Now are you happy? So on and on and on it goes until we finally say, no, I've had enough. Now I want to become your servant again. Aham haritava padaika mulam dasana dasa bhavitasmi bhuya. This is what Vichasura prays. He says, when, O Lord, will I again be engaged in your service? Bhuya, again engaged in your service. I've had enough. But instead, we haven't had enough. And as soon as we actually sincerely say to Krishna, I've had enough. I want to go home. I want to always be with you. I want to keep you dearly, tightly in the core of my heart. Then Krishna will help in that way. Manas marateshu patir gunam ste guhitva kam akrotukaya, Vichasura says. And he was in the body of a demon at that time. So even if we have the worst of bodies, if we make that turn to Krishna, then Krishna helps. He never forgets. So the Lord so Brahma helps create the ignorances, because this is what the living entity wants. Then in text 4, so he wasn't satisfied by that, so now he begins the next creation, term of creation. In the beginning of that term, Brahma created four great sages named Sanak, Sananda, Sanatan and Sanat Kumar. All of them were unwilling to adopt materialistic activities because they were highly elevated due to their semens flowing upward. So, after ignorance, he created knowledge. And this knowledge was embodied by these four sages. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that there are four principles of spiritual advancement, and he entrusted those to the four Kumaras. The first one is the Sankhya, or empiric philosophy. And then the second one, and we'll hear about Sankhya Yoga later on in this canto when Kapila Muni explains it, how to understand exactly what the material world is so one can extricate oneself from the material world. Then the second principle he gave to the Kumaras was yoga, the process of the actual extrication, control of the senses, etc., and ultimately meditation, samadhi, meditation on the Lord. And then the third one is vairagya, vairagya, detachment. Because without detachment and giving up the objects of the senses for a higher purpose and focusing the consciousness upon Krishna, one can't make advancement. And the fourth one is tapasya. Tapasya means penances or austerities. So Brahma spoke to his sons, the four Kumaras, after generating them. My dear sons, he said, now generate progeny. Because his service was to create, fill the universe with people, with the souls. But due to their being attached to Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they aimed at liberation and therefore they expressed their unwillingness. Prabhupada's purport. The four sons of Brahma, the Kumaras, declined to become family men even on the request of their great father Brahma. So this concept of that they refused to listen to their father is mentioned at different times in this chapter. Because generally, in the Vedic system especially, the authority is followed very carefully. Nowadays, the opposite is that due to the belief in the evolutionary theory, the children think that they are more advanced than their parents, so therefore if they follow them, it will be bad for the universe. The universe won't progress properly. If their parents don't like them having red or green hair or something. It's amazing how popular that is. Is that funny, that Madunga red? So many people. Yeah, you see that all around? People having red hair. Green hair isn't quite it's popular, but not as popular yet. When you come back, monkey, don't come with green hair, please. Yeah, it creates a variety. It's true. I hadn't thought of it from that point of view. So very much authority was kept in the Vedic culture. So it was astounding in one sense that the Kumaras, who this was at the very beginning, they refused. So people, those who are serious about getting released from material bondage should not be entangled in the false relationship of family bondage. People may ask how the Kumaras could refuse the orders of Brahma, who is their father, and above all, the creator of the universe. The reply is that one who is Vasudev Parayana, or seriously engaged in the devotional service of the Personality of Godhead, Vasudev, need not care for any other obligation. It is enjoined in the Bhagavatam, Deva Shibutap Tanrinam Pitrinam Nat King Karo Nayam Rinicha Rajan Sarvatmanaya Saranam Saranyam Gato Mukundam Parirityakaratam. Anyone who has completely given up all worldly relationships and has taken absolute shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, who gives us salvation, and who alone is fit to be taken shelter of, is no longer a debtor or servant of anyone, including the demigods, forefathers, sages, or other living entities, relatives, and members of human society. Thus, there was nothing wrong in the acts of the Kumaras when they refused their great father's request that they become family men. So, that is the way to look at it from the absolute point of view. That the Kumaras didn't want to it, and it was perfectly proper because their purpose was purely spiritual. But Brahma did not see it in that light at this time. So on the refusal of the sons to obey the order of their father, there was much anger generated in the mind of Brahma, which he tried to control and not express. So first there was ignorance, then knowledge, then anger. Although he tried to curb his anger, it came out from between his eyebrows, and a child of mixed blue and red was immediately generated. So blue and red, blue is ignorance and red is passion. So as the Bhagavad Gita explains, Kama Esha Krodha Esha Rajaguna Samudbhava, that when one's desires, in Brahma's case we see it, one's desires are not satisfied, and then what happens? Desires means passion, then anger comes, which is ignorance. So red and then blue. And the effect of anger will be described later. It's very interesting. So this Rudra came out. This is the anger in its true color came from between the eyebrows of Brahma as Rudra, blue-red. So after his birth, Rudra began to cry, "O destiny maker, teacher of the universe, kindly designate my name and place. The all-powerful Brahma," he's all-powerful in the material world, "who was born from the lotus, pacified the boy with gentle words, accepting his request, and said, 'Do not cry. I shall certainly do as you desire.' Thereafter," Brahma said, "you should be called Rudra by all people because you have so anxiously cried." What does Rudra mean exactly? He calls him Balak. What does Rudra literally mean? Must have Arudi. Arudi means crying loudly. Arudi, crying loudly. "My dear boy, I have already selected the following places for your residence. So here is where anger lives. The heart, the senses, the air of life, the sky, the air, the fire, the water, the earth, the sun, the moon, and austerity." Prabhupada's purport. "The creation of Rudra from between the eyebrows of Brahma as a result of his anger, generated from the motive passion, partially touched by ignorance, is very significant. In the Bhagavad Gita, the principle of Rudra is described. Krodha, anger, is the product of kama, lust, which is the result of the motive passion. When lust and hankering are unsatisfied, the element of krodha, anger, appears, which is the formidable enemy, mahashano mahapapma, formidable enemy of the conditioned soul. This most sinful and inimical passion is represented as ahankar, or the false egocentric attitude of thinking oneself to be all in all. Such an egocentric attitude on the part of the conditioned soul, who is completely under the control of material nature, is described in the Bhagavad Gita as foolish." So this is what happens. When one becomes angry, one's consciousness starts focusing, but not in a good way, not when you concentrate on something wonderful. It's not that kind of focusing, but one's consciousness focuses on something with so much anger, the passion, a concentrated passion, and you become very egocentric and thinking you want, this is exactly what happens, one thinks oneself all in all. And whatever I do is right, and the person who I am doing it to completely deserves what they're getting, but the result is just foolishness. The consciousness just focuses with this passion and ignorance, and one foolishly and egocentrically thinks his thoughts are everything. This is the effect of anger. Has anyone ever experienced that? Only me? Not you. No? Yeah? Huh? Oh, good. You're lucky. We bless you. You never have to remember it or become angry. But next time, if anyone happens to get angry, of course none of you ever get angry. But if any of you happen to get angry, just watch it develop, that focusing of the consciousness. And there's a point where you practically decide, well, should I go through with this or not? And yeah! That's angry, when you get fully egocentric. Such an egocentric attitude on the part of the conditioned soul who is completely under the control of material nature is described in the Bhagavad Gita as foolish. The egocentric attitude is a manifestation of the Rudra principle in the heart, where Krodha anger is generated. This anger develops in the heart and is further manifested through various senses, like the eyes, hands, and legs, and also from the mouth. When a man is angry, he expresses his anger with red-hot eyes and sometimes makes a display of clenching his fists or kicking his legs. This exhibition of the Rudra principle is the proof of Rudra's presence in such places. When a man is angry, he breathes very rapidly, and thus Rudra is represented in the air of life or in the activity of breathing. When the sky is overcast with dense clouds and roars in anger, and when the wind blows very fiercely, the Rudra principle is manifest. And so also when the seawater is infuriated by the wind, it appears in a gloomy feature of Rudra, which is very fearful to the common man. When fire is ablaze, we can also experience the presence of Rudra. And when there is an inundation over the earth, we can understand that this is also the representation of Rudra. Then Lord Brahma said to the boy, "You have 11 other names, my dear boy. Rudra, Manu, Mahinas, Mahan, Shiva, Rita, Daj, Ugarita, Bhava, Kala, Vamadev, and Dhritavat. Oh Rudra, you have 11 wives called the Rudranis. They are as follows: Di, Dhriti, Vasala, Uma, Niyut, Sarpi, Ila, Ambika, Iravati, Svada, and Diksha. My dear boy, you may now accept all the names and places designated for you and your different wives. And since you are now one of the masters of the living entities, you may increase the population on a large scale." So he wanted, because Brahma's interest was to create something for the population. So his first attempt was the Kumaras, and that didn't work out. And his second attempt he created was Rudra, anger. So what happens when you try to engage anger? Of course, it can be done. Narottama Thakur says about Krodha in Prem Bhakti Chandrika, there's some verse where he says how to engage Kama and Krodha. And that Kama means to get things in Christian service, and Krodha, you become angry at those who are envious of the Lord. But when people who do not know how to properly engage anger, engage it, it creates such a devastation, and the results are so averse to anything beneficial for either them really or anyone else, the world or anything. So Brahma will also find that out too when he tries to engage Rudra. So the most powerful Rudra, whose bodily color was blue mixed with red, created many offsprings. That's what Brahma said. Exactly remembering him in feature strengths and furious natures. The sons and grandsons generated by Rudra were unlimited in number. And when they assembled together, they attempted to devour the entire universe. When Brahma, the father of the living entities, saw this, he became afraid of the situation. Brahma told Rudra, "Oh, best amongst the demigods, you knew how to. There is no need for you to generate any living entities of this nature. Probably it's better if you take some rest for a little while. They have begun to devastate everything on all sides with the fiery flames from their eyes, and they have even attacked me. My dear son, you had better situate yourself in penance. You do some tapasya, some austerities, which is go and meditate somewhere, which is auspicious for all living entities and which will bring all benedictions upon you. By penance only shall you be able to create the universe as it was before." So Brahma was actually telling them, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, that this anger only has one purpose, and that is for destruction. So the universe, it was just the time for the creation, and Rudra's presence was going to bring the destruction. So he said, later on we'll have a use for you. So now you go and peacefully meditate somewhere. Rudra was advised not to destroy while the period of creation and maintenance was going on, but to situate himself in penance and wait for the time of dissolution when his services would be called for. He said, by penance only can one even approach the personality of Godhead. Tapasaiva param duti bhagavantam arhukshajam. Who is within the heart of every living entity and at the same time beyond the reach of all the senses. Rudra was advised by Brahma to perform penance as an example to his sons and followers that penance is necessary for attaining the favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Bhagavad Gita it is said that the common mass of people follow the path shown by an authority. Thus Brahma, disgusted with the Rudra generations and afraid of being devoured by the increase of population, asked Rudra to stop producing such an unwanted generation and to take to penance for attaining the favor of the Supreme Lord. We find, therefore, in pictures that Rudra is always sitting in meditation for the attainment of the favor of the Lord. Indirectly, the sons and followers of Rudra are advised to stop the business of annihilation following the Rudra principle while the peaceful creation of Brahma is going on. So Maitreya said, thus Rudra, having been ordered by Brahma, circumambulated his father, the master of the Vedas. Addressing him with words of assent, he entered the forest to perform austere penances. So Brahma thought, so far there was ignorance, which was not so satisfying. Then the Kumaras, which didn't get my purpose fulfilled. And then the reaction against that was Rudra, anger. And although Rudra created generations, it was horrible. It was worse than no one. So he made another attempt. Brahma, who was empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thought of generated living entities and begot 10 sons for the extension of the generations. Now Brahma continues the creation with more sons who all have different characteristics. These are known as the 10 great sages. Marichi, Atrimuni, Angira, Pulastya, Pulaha, Kratu, Bhrigu, Vasishta, Daksha, and the 10th son, Narada, were thus born. Prabhupada's purport. The whole process of the creation, maintenance, and dissolution of the cosmic manifestation is meant to give the conditioned souls a chance to go back home, back to Godhead. Brahma created Rudra to help him in the creative endeavor. But from the very beginning, Rudra began to devour the whole creation, and thus he had to be stopped from such devastating activities. Brahma therefore created another set of good children, who are mostly in favor of worldly fruit of activities. So they were great sages, but they were mostly materialistic, but in a Vedic way. Brahma knew very well, however, that without devotional service to the Lord, there is hardly any benefit for the conditioned souls, and therefore he at last created his worthy son, Narada, who is the supreme spiritual master of all transcendentalists. Without devotional service to the Lord, one cannot make progress in any department of activities, although the path of devotional service is always independent of everything material. Only the transcendental loving service of the Lord can deliver the real goal of life, and thus the service rendered by Sriman Narada Muni is the highest amongst all the sons of Brahma. Narada was born from the deliberation of Brahma, which is the best part of his body, Vishishu was born from his breathing, Daksha from a thumb, Bhrigu from his touch, and Kratu from his hand. Pulastya was generated from his ears, Angira from the mouth, Atri from the eyes, Mirichi from the mind, Pulaha from the navel of Brahma. We'll read Prabhupada's purport to 23 and we'll stop there. Narada was born from the best deliberation of Brahma because Narada was able to deliver the Supreme Lord to anyone he liked. The Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be realized by any amount of Vedic knowledge or by any number of penances. But a pure devotee of the Lord like Narada can deliver the Lord by his goodwill. The very name Narada suggests that he can deliver the Lord. Nara means the Supreme Lord and Da means one who can deliver. That he can deliver the Supreme Lord does not mean that the Lord is like a commodity that can be delivered to any person. But Narada can deliver to anyone the transcendental loving service of the Lord as a servitor, friend, parent, or lover, as one may desire out of one's own transcendental love for the Lord. In other words, it is Narada only who can deliver the path of bhakti yoga, the highest mystic means for attainment of the Supreme Lord. Narada, who gives the Lord. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments? So we'll continue tomorrow, starting with text 25.
And there won't be a break in between?
Yes, there will be a break in between them. Well, we'll see, but maybe 2 weeks. 2 weeks, so I think after the 5th or the 6th, there's a 2 week break. I think there's a Friday, I don't know what date that is. Huh?
3 and 4 is Thursday.
Okay, then there'll be at least a 2 week break to the 19th or so, at least. Why, were you planning on doing something during that time?
Huh?
I wasn't,
but maybe I didn't
know. Do you know if there's going to be much of a, is there going to be any kind of a marathon? Till timing sounds about right. Any other questions or comments? So after Brahma's creation, actually right at the end of this, then things start changing from the technical parts of the creation. And then goes to Varaha. And then some very, very interesting two chapters on the visit of the four Kumaras to Vaikuntha. And there's some more questions. And then Kardama Devahuti. And then Kapila Muni's instructions to Devahuti, which we'll discuss. They're interesting. They discuss the creation again for the third time. In the canto, and then creation will be finished. And process of creation will be finished until the 12th canto, when it will be summarized again. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Guru Prabhupada ki jai, Lord Brahma ki jai.